Broadcast of the Economic Club of Indiana Speaker Series is made possible in part by ProLiance Energy. ProLiance, adding power to energy. Information is at ProLiance.com.
Welcome to the Economic Club of Indiana. Mark Miles is this month's speaker. Miles is the chairman of the 2012 Super Bowl Host Committee. He's also the CEO of the Central Indiana Corporate Partnership. Miles says that building a comprehensive public transport system in Indianapolis and close suburbs is going to cost money. He says it will need a dedicated funding source.
It's my pleasure to introduce our speaker this afternoon. Mark Miles is the type of guy who gets things done. Whether it's bringing the 2012 Super Bowl to Indianapolis or uniting top business leaders to grow Indiana's economy, you want Mark Miles on your team. He is president and chief executive officer of the Central Indiana Corporate Partnership, a regional coalition of the CEOs of Central Indiana's most significant employers and leaders of universities. The partnership seeks to foster growth and opportunity throughout Central Indiana, advocate policy directions, and engage in collaborative efforts to address regional issues. Miles has been called Mr. Indianapolis, thanks in part to his role as co-chair of the bid team that secured the 2012 Super Bowl for the city. And he continues to serve as chair of the host committee. As a constant advocate for advancing Central Indiana, Miles has said adding a light rail transportation system would be a game changer and the type of project that would help lure more young professionals to the area. He is founding member of the Central Indiana Transit Task Force, a group that believes an enhanced transit system is long overdue for this region. When he's not working to better Central Indiana, you might find Mark watching or playing tennis. And he's not just a fan of the game. For 15 years, he was the CEO for the Association of Tennis Professionals, or ATP, the governing body of men's professional tennis throughout the world. A graduate of Wabash College, Miles also spent time at Eli Lilly as Executive Director of Corporate Relations. Today, he will address economic development initiatives in Central Indiana. I, like each of you, look forward to hearing his remarks. Please join me in welcoming Mark Miles.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Alicia. It's an honor to share the podium and to sit next to Alicia. When I left Lilly in the very beginning of 1990, she came back to Indianapolis, or came to Indianapolis at Lilly, so we didn't have the chance to overlap much, but having a little bit to do with trying to attract her to Indianapolis, I have nothing but admiration for her. Her career there has been stellar, and her community services as well. What I thought I might do is start by saying just a word about how I got here today. Deborah Daniels, seated out here, called me about a week ago. I've known her for more years than either of us want to remember. And I have to say, we're both in different places. I sensed desperation in her voice over the phone. She said there'd been a change of plans for the Economic Club. It was a very important thing for the Economic Club that she find a sub. It was important to the chamber, Kevin. Maybe the state of Indiana. I can't remember exactly what the pitch was. And given our long history together, would I be kind enough to fill in for a nationally prominent figure who at the last minute could not be here? So I had no choice. I said, yes, of course. I hung up the phone, and then waves of anxiety and nausea started for me. Not because of any feeling about being here today, but because I was reminded of the last time that I was asked to fill in for a nationally, in fact, internationally prominent figure 35 years ago. Back then, Indianapolis had a franchise in world team tennis, and it was called the Indiana Loves. And I happened to do some work for the guy, the local guy who owned the club. And he called me one afternoon in the summer. I was in college. And he said, I need your help. It's just like Deborah. The Hawaii Lays are coming to town to play the Loves tonight here in the convention center. And You know, the league has a rule that each team has to have so many players on their bench for every given match. It turns out there's a person who's absent from the Lays. Would you mind coming over late this afternoon? You'll meet Billie Jean King. She's the commissioner of the league. You sign a contract. You get $20. You sit on the bench, sign a few autographs. You don't have to play. I said, I'm your man. So far, so good. What I didn't know was that it was sold out. I did know Ely Nestazi was the number one player in the world, but I didn't get the connection yet. I signed the contract. I was shown to the locker room. I went in the locker room, and the coach threw this Adidas blue warm-up at me, and I put it on, and then somebody said, Ely. It said Ely Nestazi across the back. So I was beginning to get it. The crowd of 4,000 or whatever, every seat sold, had not been told that Ely Nestazi wasn't in town. Until after the national anthem, and then they couldn't wait any longer to introduce the players, the rosters, and I remember distinctly the news was made evident by something like the PA announcer saying, and tonight we have local student Mark Miles substituting for Ely Nestazi. And the response of the crowd was something like, boo! The building shook. So as soon as I hung up from talking to Deborah Daniels, it was exactly that went through my mind. But I noticed that the Economics Club organization had the good sense of responsibility to inform you all that there was a sub, and I'll try not to deserve that sort of recognition by the end of these comments. I plan to say a word about CICP, but just a word, and then a lot more words about the work that we've been doing with others in transit. But I thought I might say just a word first about the Super Bowl, because there's some interesting stuff being announced today. The camera came in just a minute ago to ask for a comment. The news release went out. This is not really a Super Bowl announcement, but I wanted you all to make sure you knew about it, because I think it's a great development for the city, and it's the kind of thing that we hope that the Super Bowl becomes a catalyst for more and more. We're on track in terms of the organization of the game, the fundraising, the planning, everybody, the volunteers. It's just stupendous. We feel incredibly good about the work on the Near East Side, the so-called legacy project in housing and 10th Street redevelopment, and the multi-use community center that will be built on Tech's campus. We feel great about partnering with the University of Indianapolis, where the bubble will be placed there for a practice facility. Today, in addition, the announcement's being made by the city and the Department of Public Works that Georgia Street, which I'd ask you to look at as you leave, is going to be transformed permanently into an unbelievably cool public iconic place for our city. So if you think about it, on the east end of it, it's, you know, Georgia hits Penn at Conseco, basically. And then you have Meridian, Illinois, Capitol, and you're here, and it connects now, delivers you to the front of the expanded convention center and the main grand entrance. So it's really strategically important space. And the idea, through TE grant from the state of Indiana, through the city of Indianapolis, and some other fundraising, is to create a fabulous public space that will be a place we want to go every night for nightlife as people who live here, a place that the ICVA can market to conventions that come here so they can be in here or they can go outside and have this additional kind of asset to use, and a place that our sporting events and others can use and we can use for big occasions. Las Ramblas in Barcelona, lots of kind of comparables around the world, but it's going to be a fabulous facility for Indianapolis. It's being announced today, and the Super Bowl will be the first tenant for our Super Bowl Village, but it's a really cool thing I think you'll all appreciate when you learn more about it. So with that, let me just go to the CICP and say a word about what we are and what we do, and it will be just a word. It's a organization made up of CEOs, of business leaders, big and small, and university presidents, and the mission is basically to try to do things, not necessarily popular things, hard things, to provide direction and thought leadership and maybe some capacity to help provide a more and more robust economy for central Indiana. And the strategy is here on the screen behind me. If you can see it, it's pretty simple. First of all, focus on your strengths. So we deal with what they all call clusters, those economic sectors where we have competitive advantage. You could probably name them: life sciences, advanced manufacturing and logistics, IT, and increasingly clean tech, energy, business. So we do that, and I'll come back to that in 1 second. But then we ought to also, we think, focus on some broader themes that don't fit neatly into clusters. Things like the business climate in Indiana, things like human capital, talent, and things like our entrepreneurial culture and whether we have enough innovation. So in terms of industry clusters, that chart is supposed to tell you what they are. We're building it out. Life sciences is the first one. The organization that's part of the CICP family is BioCrossroads, and it has an incredible track record of success. In a few years, it's raised or leveraged more than $300 million in venture capital. Today, it's in the newspapers for two different bits of news out of Chicago and out of D.C., more federal money for the Indiana Health Information Exchange, which is a BioCrossroads spawned thing. In terms of manufacturing and logistics, our organization is called Connexus Indiana. Carol D'Amico is here, very much a part of it and its leadership. Enormous success and track record and accomplishment in a couple years, focused mainly on how to upskill our workforce. If we're going to have growth in manufacturing logistics, we better have people who can power those in the industry. Technology is something that our organization TechPoint looks after, and it's as much about entrepreneurialism as it is about IT. It's done things like support Halo, which is an AngelNet group of small investors that's having real effect in startups, doubling the ORS Fellow program, which is a way to keep our smart kids in Indiana when they graduate, get them placed in entrepreneurial firms, and other activities like that. In clean tech, we have a new organization that's been around a year called Energy System Network. In a year under Paul Mitchell's leadership, this has made remarkable progress. More than $500 million in federal grants has come to many of our companies engaged in this sector, and a number of projects are in the pipeline that you'll be reading more about. Those organizations are all about creating the conditions for organic growth here, making this a place that our governor calls a better sandbox so that our businesses can be more successful. They're not so much involved in the marketing of the region. So the final or fifth branded initiative of the CICP is called Indy Partnership. It represents 10 counties, and their job is to market this place and to bring new companies in. And they, too, have had great success. So that's kind of what we do and how we're organized to do it. The next thing I wanted to talk to you about are those things that we've worked on in the last year that don't fit neatly into these economic clusters. And there are three listed here that have been kind of our preoccupation. One is we started to get involved in K-12 policy. I'm sure we're making some people mad. That's part of it. But we came to the conclusion with others that it was just sort of unacceptable that we continue to get kids through third grade who cannot read. Can't read at grade level, and yet they go to fourth grade. And we don't do what it takes to teach them to read, even though we know how to do that. And so working in league with others, the legislature this past session passed a law that modeled after Florida and other places that says we'll end social promotion. It's not that we want to see a bunch of 18-year-old third graders that can't read. It is that we want to fix the problem, and we think we just have to make it that much of a priority. So this is one initiative that in the last session got a green light from the legislature. Now the job is to make sure that DOE and our educators get the job done. A second is the work we've done with the state chamber and the realtors and others that is harder. It's less successful, and it's dealing with the obvious need to consolidate levels of local government to try to politically push the initiatives of the Kern and Shepherd Commission, and we've had limited success there. Finally, the thing I want to talk to you about today is taking a look at transportation or transit. So why? Why are we doing this? Why did we spend a year and a lot of money thinking about this topic? When we moved back to Indianapolis about 4 years ago, we could read in the papers about the nickel plate line. We could read about the deficiencies of our bus system. It was obvious that in spite of decades of research and really good thinking, there was no consensus, no plan, nothing was going to happen. And, I felt like we were being asked to pick between political parties. Do you want to support the nickel plate line, or do you want to be with the Fix Indigo First group? It was so clear that we didn't have clarity and consensus, and we weren't sure what the right answers were. So we decided it was a big enough question, enough cities were doing something about it, that we ought to look into it to see what we thought. And we, and is not Mark Miles, we as a group of people, including this group, the Indianapolis Chamber was a full partner with us in this, and the Central Indiana Community Foundation. So we said, let's get some really smart people. They probably aren't politically correct. And let's get them to promise us two things, that they'll do their homework, they'll read the material, they'll ask tough questions of the consultants that we'll hire, and that they will not start, they won't come in the room to prove a conclusion that they've already reached. They have to start being agnostic. So some of us probably had some preconceived notions, but it wasn't fair game to advocate them. We were going to do the homework first and then see where the evidence took us. We asked three people, most of whom you will know, Al Hubbard, John Neighbors, and Bob Palmer, to chair this, and added others, including road builders and people that you wouldn't think of adding maybe if you were going to look into transit. We also decided we're going to work very hard at taking a cost-benefit perspective, a business perspective, at looking at the costs and the benefits and seeing what kind of rate of return certain investments would make so that we could make it as useful as possible from that perspective. We hired outside consultants, and it was a great team. When we worked with the public sector, the MPO, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, Indigo, and CERTA. The first thing that we did was say, well, what's at stake here? What are the issues? And this lists mobility, strengthening the region's core, congestion, environment, and overall competitiveness became what we would list as the issues that we think are at stake. So let me start with mobility. This is getting people to work or getting them to their medical appointment or getting them to where they want to go that may be in their off hours. The cost of transportation for all of us is huge. It's about 18% of personal income around the country. It's second only to housing in terms of what Americans spend on it. In Marion County, 7% of our people do not have access to a car. They live in a household and they don't have any access to a car. And another 10% live in households where there are two workers and only one car. So you begin instantly to get a sense of the kind of baseline need. We're the 23rd largest metropolitan area with the 100th biggest bus system in this country. We spend roughly a third of what our other peer cities do on bus transportation annually. Let me give you a little more granularity on what this means to humans in this county. So I don't know to what extent you can make this out, but this is a map of kind of the north half of Marion County. And if you start over to my left, your right, and you can see where this blue line is, that's 46th and Arlington. So let's just say that you wanted to get to work. You've got a job at Park 100 up on the northwest side. If you had a car, and it'd take you 20 minutes, maybe 25 minutes. If you want to take our bus system today to get to your 8 o'clock start of day, you better leave your house before 5:30. It takes 2.5 hours to get all the way downtown, change buses. The average wait time is about an hour, and then to get up to Park 100 to your job. And the chances are you got to walk to get to where you pick up the bus, and it doesn't deliver you to your place of employment on top of it. Let me give you another example. So let's say you live over on the west side at 34th and Moeller Road, and you work only 8 miles from home at FedEx. That should take you 10 or 15 minutes if you had a car. It takes 2.5 hours because you're going to go all the way into the center of the city, come all the way back out. Then it's going to drop you at the old terminal, I believe, and Bob Palmer at FedEx is going to hire a jitney to run over to the terminal and get you to your place of work. The busiest shift starts at 11 o'clock. It ends, most of them finish around 5. It took him 2.5 hours to get there for those few hours of work. And to get home, He takes them back via jitney to the terminal, but the first bus doesn't run until about 5, so they cool their heels for 2 hours before they start the 2.5-hour trip. And you can guess what they're working for. And I mean, I could be in London from here in the time that they spend, I'm not making that up, every day to work at FedEx if they need bus transportation from that side of town. How about if you need medical care? So this is the same resident at 46th and Arlington, and they need to get to Wishard, and it happens to be on a Saturday. Yeah, it's 2.5 hours. I'll spare you the details. Suppose you wanted to go shopping from that location to Glendale, which is not very far away, but you can only do it on Saturday. And you want to go to Glendale because there's a Target. There are big box stores you can't find downtown. 2 hours. This is the life that a lot of our people live. And that's what, in part, what we mean by workforce mobility. Second issue, and these are in no particular order, for me this one maybe is first, in terms of our economic challenge for the region, and it's the weakening core. In many respects, I remember Bill Hubnett many years ago saying that Indianapolis, no great city can be like a donut. It can't be a hole in the center, by which he meant downtown, and then this solid vital area around that. So today, what are we? We're pretty solid downtown. Then we have our hole, sort of the townships, and then we've got solid in a ring outside that. It's a different shape, a different geometry. But nevertheless, what's happening in a different way is the weakening of that vital core in Marion County. Just a few quick stats. In terms of population, we are flat to about a 10% decline in population in Marion County between 2005 and projected for 2025. Most of the surrounding counties will experience at least 10% growth during that period. In terms of the weakening core, we can look at our share of unemployment, our share of employment. It's basically flat. It will decline a few points between 1998 and 2006. But it's projected between now and 2020 that we will lose jobs, not just in terms of share, but in absolute terms. This is income. In Center Township, the average family income is $30,000. In the rest of the county as a whole, it's 45, and in central Indiana, the whole region, it's 50,000. Not exactly vital. If we look at growth in assessed property values, and this is got through 2008, I believe, over the last, from 2003 to 2008, Marion County had about a total 1.5% annual growth. That is, the rest of the counties were 2.5 to 6 times the annual growth in their assessed value. So we're losing share in our core. I think that is a hugely important issue because I believe, like Hudnut did many years ago, that if the bigger core, the county, atrophies, then the entire region has a problem, and it's something we should be paying a lot of attention to on a lot of fronts. Congestion is an issue. If you can see this, you can see that we have more congestion than most of our peer cities. Many of you know many of the stats. I will say this. The math is that we lose about $1.6 million per day in lost productivity because we sit in traffic. The number up here is about 39 hours wasted per day on the average, but I have none because I get straight here. Those of you who are really in congestion waste a lot more of your time every day, and it's in the aggregate a real problem. Environment is a serious issue. You know the stats here. Transit isn't the only issue for environment, but a transit future will make a difference. And then Alicia mentioned competitiveness. This is the talent struggle. This is much more subjective. There are surveys that I could talk to you in greater length about, but I think if you have a college-age student, if you have younger people, ask them what they think. Do they think that options for getting around, options in transit are important? I think you get a pretty strong sense that the answer is yes. And they're aware that we don't do very well compared to our peer cities and others that we aspire to be in the same league with. So that's what we thought was at stake. Let me just take a minute now to tell you where we came out. We spent a year on this. And basically our conclusions are our sort of thoughts about the future could be categorized into four areas. What should we do? What's the system look like? If we're going to build one, how do we pay for it? How do we run it? What's the governance for it? What's the structure for Regional Transit Authority? And how in the world would we ever get it done? So, you know, when Al Hubbard started you guys, many of you know Al. He thought transit was a liberal plot. He was not easy. It was not clear to him that a big public investment for purposes like this was going to make a lot of sense as a fiscally conservative person. But I think if he was here, he'd tell you that he became convinced on a number of counts. And one of them was this return on investment analysis. We have these microeconomists work with the system engineers and kind of calibrate the design of the system so that we could try to maximize the value of the investment. And this, as I'll say again in a minute, produces a pretty high rate of return for the public investment involved. It happens that a multimodal system that looks at the right integration of all the modes of transit that are available to us made the most sense and produced the greatest return. So the first thing is that before we started, the state and our MPO had an $8.9 billion plan between now and 2030 for expansion of our roads and our highways. If we did nothing, you could assume that was going to happen and it was funded through the normal sources of funds. We put the pencil to that. This will not be popular. But we came back and said, let's have a cost-effective highway expansion. And our suggestion identified a half a dozen places where we could reduce the increase in roads that's planned and save about $600 million, which we'd like to plow back into other aspects of a multimodal plan. We then looked at other aspects of congestion. As you would guess, if you live here, the most congested parts of our city, of the region, are up around Fishers, northeast on 69, and down around Greenwood, south on 65. There are new technologies that many of you will know about called congestion pricing, tolled expressways. When the highway plan that survives, as we see it, increases the lane capacity in those two choke points, north and south, our suggestion is that the new lane capacity be tolled expressways, which doesn't mean that there's a big arm that comes down. If you went to the Super Bowl and you drove from Miami to Fort Lauderdale, you experienced this. It was really slick. You can get over into the tolled express lanes if you choose. The technology knows you're there, charges you based on the time of day and how congested it is. You get a bill. When you move over there, the free lanes, the same number of lanes that are free today, move faster. So the whole system is more efficient. It actually produces net revenue. We'd like to stick our toe in that technology water northeast and southeast. The third thing is the bus system, which I take it by now, I hope by now you can tell I have some strong feelings about. We've got to make a huge investment, and we've got to do it so that the bus system works on a lot of different levels to a lot of different extents. First of all, it's got to work for Marion County people. Instead of having an average wait time when you change buses of an hour, we've got to cut that down to one-third of what it is today, 10 to 20 minutes, and that can be done through this plan. We also need to help commuters who are looking at getting from the ring in and vice versa, and we would invest in more bus system for that. And finally, we need to be able to begin to think about a bus system as a regional asset, a regional service, and there needs to be ways to move people from Carmel to Westfield to Noblesville. Not commuters, not Marion County folks, but people who have a reason to get around within their counties. And so that's part of this plan for bus expansion. It would make a huge difference in the mobility of our workforce. And then the icing on the cake, but it's not frivolous, it's not dessert, is we think there's a role for rail. And some of it is what you've heard about, some of it you haven't heard as much about. If you can see this map, going up to the northeast is a rail line that exists that is the nickel plate line. It turns out to us that it pencils out, and when done in conjunction with a significant expansion of the bus system, really makes a lot of sense on a lot of different levels. We haven't opined about the technology, but if you can see that there's a blue line farther out up to Fishers, that would have the service aspects or characteristics of commuter rail. It's more express. The stations are much farther apart. You might not run it on weekends. But when it gets farther in, it gets up to about the fairgrounds and it turns into light rail, much more frequent stations, needs to have a very high level of service, can't shut down on weekends when people need to use it. The same idea goes in existing tracks south-southeast, goes down to about Greenwood. Farther out is more commuter rail. Farther in is more light rail. And then the surprise maybe is this light rail line all the way across the Washington Street corridor. So it would traverse the county all the way across. It gets you to the north end of the airport, and starts over, I think, around Cumberland. One of this works to move people around. It helps with workforce mobility. I think it may be the most important investment we can make as a public to incent reinvestment in Marion County. Of course, it will also do the same where there are stations in Hamilton County or Johnson County or Hendricks County. But a lot of this track is in Marion County, and I think it is maybe our best single bullet, although there need to be more than one, to reverse this weakening of the core of our region. Because there's no doubt that when these things get built and they work, they spur real estate investment and create places that are interesting for young people to live. So it isn't cheap. We decided if we were going to have a point of view about this, our group would say what it was going to cost as best we could determine it and how to pay for it. As I already said, we're about to spend $8.9 billion on roads anyway. That gets funded without you feeling it because it's the existing sources of funds for road, although we'd like to cut that back a little bit. The total bus and transit plan from a capital perspective is about $2.4 billion, and we think we could get about half of that from the feds. The annual cost to operate it and maintain it all in requires about $100 million a year. You can't get that out of tiffing the track alone or Farebox, which might produce 20%, or the money from the express tollways. There is no system that doesn't require a local dedicated funding source. So we think we have to have that. And we went ahead and told people how we would raise it. I'll get to that in 1 second. We talked about the funding principles. We don't want to force this on people. We think the question for the public ought to be, is this relevant enough for you to want to invest in it? Is there value for money for you? And then you tell us. So the suggestion is that this is pay-to-play by county. If you imagine that map you saw a second ago, it's obvious that not all counties' residences are going to benefit equally. So the suggestion was let them decide. If they think it makes sense, we will have a referenda in each county, and if you vote to opt in, you will tax yourselves, and it will go into the pot, and the system will get built out to you. And if you don't, it won't. We believe this can start if Marion County and Hamilton County at least decide to opt in at the beginning. And that if we do it and then we start and it's successful, even if only two begin the process with us, other counties will eventually get it, the demand will be built, and we have to set this up so that other counties can come in over time. So the strategy is, the principles are that, pay to play by county, and we're suggesting a referenda in November of next year, of 2011. The strategy for how to pay for it, we're suggesting sales tax. The local share could be funded by a third to half a percent in sales tax, almost irrespective of how many counties get in. It works out. There are very important policymakers who don't like the idea of it being funded by sales tax. There will be I don't even know if it will rise to the level of the debate, but there will be a lot of folks in the legislature and elsewhere that think that local funding sources should be more along the lines of local option income tax. If it were local option income tax, the system could be built for a tenth to a 15th of a percent increase in the rate. The other thing that we've worked on is how to do it. I've said if we won the lottery and we had all the money we needed right now to build this system, I wouldn't do it. We're not ready. We would waste it. We would not. It is a very complex, very difficult thing to figure out how to develop and operate a transit system like this. And we don't have the capacity, the experience as a community to do it. So a huge amount of work needs to go into figuring out how to build that. And that is ongoing work during this calendar year. And a private, public, quiet steering committee is working on that. So then we said, how do we actually sequence all this so it has a chance of happening, if you believe it should happen? The first phase was this private sector task force did its plan. We made it public the beginning of February. The second phase is going on now. I hope you've seen it. The public sector, Indigo, the MPO, and CERTA have this IndyConnect campaign. It's not advocacy. It's to tell the public about it and to get as much feedback as possible. We didn't think that we could design the best possible, most relevant, highest level service system with a bunch of us in a room. The public needs to chew on it and work on it and improve the quality of it and the specifics of it, and that happens this year. The third phase is the next session. We're not going to ask the General Assembly for state money. We're going to ask them for permission to decide for ourselves if we want to pay for it ourselves, referenda in November of 11. And we're going to ask them to create this governing body, this regional transit authority, which has to be created statutorily by the legislature. So that's this. That's what we've been up to with respect to transit. I think the stakes are enormously high. My observation so far is that as business people and in terms of a lot of elected officials, I've begun to believe that we're way behind public sentiment. We have some surveys to support that, but it's also anecdotal. I think people get it. It isn't that anybody's saying everybody ought to get out of their car. That isn't ever going to happen. It is that we believe, for all the reasons we've tried to touch on, that we need to have options, we need to have choices, and that we will fall further and further behind the other cities with whom we compete for everything, businesses, talent, and the works, if we don't move out smartly and frankly, in most cases, begin to catch up. If you want more information, you can get it at IndyConnect. And if you want to get involved, we'd love that. There are two websites here, IndyConnect.org and info.IndyConnect.org. If you want more information, if you've got a point of view, go online. Damn it or improve it. We genuinely want this to be improved by the process. And if you have a group that wants to hear from somebody who can tell your group more about it, there are lots of people who are eager to do just that. So I hope when I stop, I don't get a round of boos back to where we started. I hope you appreciate what's at stake here, and I hope you'll get involved. Improve it or campaign against it, but don't sit there over the next year and let us just spin our wheels as a community any longer. Thank you very much.
Well, Mark, the first question is a two-part question. And I think you've touched on the second part a little bit. But I quite frankly think that the person who wrote this question really wants an answer to the first part. So what was your batting average at Dodger baseball camp? And what are the employer-employee issues if we do not improve or expand transportation in the region?
Well, so David Shane or Ted Boehm, I don't know, I can name the people in the room who, with our governor and others, went to, this is how crazy we are, went to Dodger Fantasy Camp 15 years ago. Some of them, however, are still carrying around the baseball cards they got printed in their wallet. I don't carry mine. I'm not going to answer the first question. What was the second?
The second part is, what are the employer-employee issues if we do not improve or expand transportation in the region?
Well, I hope they're obvious. I mean, let me give you one recent case study that our Indy partnership and the IEDC were involved in, and that was the move of Medco to the region. Fortune 50 company looking at creating a big investment anywhere really in the Midwest. Three of our counties were finalists in the process, and Boone County was selected. Very important new employer to this region. Really cool business. It's in life sciences, it's in IT, and in technology. One of the critical things for them was how many pharmacists and farm tech employees do our universities put out and where do they live? They wanted to draw a line around not so many miles but so many minutes from their residences to work. And so they looked at, we could show them with a heat map where this population is, and they could draw a circle, and they could draw the other circles, and they chose Boone County because it was the best answer for them, primarily from a workforce mobility perspective. You can create your own examples. There are lots of them. Pick an employer. Imagine who needs to get to work there. You know, I had this conversation with my buddy Al Hubbard. I said, you got to think about the buses. And he said, oh, come on, we have this plant over on wherever it is, State Street. I don't think our people come to work on buses. I said, well, so he took the initiative to contact his general manager. And the question he asked was, what percentage of our employees don't have a car with which to get, their own car with which to get to work? And the answer was 25%. He then said, so they all take the bus? And the answer was, oh, no, nobody does. You can't get to work with our bus system. So they're carpooling, they're innovating. But it's hard to imagine a business that doesn't have this as an issue.
Thank you. Number of questions related to funding. So one is, how are other cities funding their systems, and how are they doing in this current environment? And then specifically Denver, given that we've looked to Denver as a model to a certain extent for our system, our proposed system. So what have we learned from their problems?
Well, we've looked at Denver as a group and a lot of other cities, and the first thing you have to take away is it does require a dedicated local source of funding. I don't think there's any other place in the country, probably the world, where that isn't the case. So if we want this, we're going to have to bite the bullet. Far and away, most frequently in America, the local funding source is sales tax. So it is what it is. It may not be the vision of our fiscal leaders at the moment, but that is the most useful source. Why? We liked it because, A, it's the easiest to do politically. People are less resistant to sales tax increases than income tax. It's just a fact that I can show you time and time again in surveys. We also liked it because we do like the idea of other people helping us pay for it. And so when we bring visitors in, when we have counties that don't opt in but do come in, we can spread the cost a bit or the funding a bit if sales tax were the way to do it, as opposed to income tax, where it's if you live in a participating county, you pay it. So that's sort of the answer. Denver in particular is a really interesting story. We went out there thinking, well, they're cowboys. They got pickup trucks. Surely they don't get on a train, right? They have an extraordinary bus system, which most people miss. We think about their trains today. An extraordinary bus system that's a real option even if you have a car in the garage. You use it for, if you're a little older and you want to go to a game downtown, you might very well use a bus system or a train as opposed to getting in your car. Or if you're one of my kids, no, I won't say that. So the bus system is first, and then it basically had a little bit of a downtown light rail system. They raised some money to go sort of southwest and southeast with rail lines, way oversubscribed. They were so popular that what began to happen was a clamor from the other points on the compass saying, when do we get our line? And so they went back to the drawing board. They proposed publicly to go out to the airport, to go northeast, to go to Boulder, and I think to go toward the mountains. Had a referendum to increase sales tax. It passed overwhelmingly. As far as it goes, remarkably successful experience. Took them 2 more years to do the environmental studies and the rest of the stuff. While that happened, commodity prices damn near doubled, and now they don't have a system plan that's financed anymore. So this is not without difficulties. But they have regrouped, commodity prices have settled, and they're going back to raise the appropriate money to do it. You can take that as an example of a problem, or you can take an example of a success. In my mind, there's no question that the asset that they have built has been very successful, and that the population in general wants more of it.
Thank you. So continuing with the funding theme, Indianapolis is a 360-degree suburb-to-suburb commuting city. Light rail will serve only the northeast corridor with no value to 90-plus percentage of Indianapolis. Why not tax only the northeast corridor residents and companies for light rail?
So I'll answer it a little differently, and I'll give the asker the benefit of the doubt, having not seen the three lines, because they had to put the question in first. But, you know, when we first got involved in this, we came back to Indianapolis from Jacksonville, Florida. And while we were there, the mayor before last looked at the fact that they were just choking in congestion because the city is southern part of the country. People, it's like gravity, right? People just fall from the north and establish themselves in southern climates. And so this big population explosion, a city cut up by rivers and bodies of water equals traffic. Had to do something about it. Proposed a better Jacksonville plan. It wasn't green and it wasn't transit. It was this enormous expansion of roads. But here's what I learned from it. If you looked in the newspaper to see the map of what your 1 cent of sales tax would get you if it passed, everybody benefited. It was relevant to your drive to work, to your wife's drive to work, to getting the kids to school, whatever it was, your parents. You could live on almost any point in the compass and get some benefit from it. So in my mind, the question is entirely rational. If all we were talking about was building the nickel plate line, I think we would all pass away before that happened. because it isn't fundable simply by users. No system is. And it's not relevant enough to create a great enough interest around the region for it to have enough support to happen. So our orientation was, if something was going to happen, it needed to be comprehensive. It needed to have wide, deep relevance. For us, I think that starts with a bus system that is dense in Marion County, connects us to our ring counties, and begins to move people around in their own counties, even if they never come to us who live in Indianapolis. But it also begins to have effect when you think northeast, southeast, and all the way across Washington Street corridor. If you think about the number of neighborhood redevelopments, whether it's Speedway or go across Washington Street, think about Central State, whatever that development's called now, it's sputtered for a long time. You put a rail station across on a track across Washington Street in that neighborhood, I think it'll happen. So it has not only, it has all kinds of relevance, and we hope that, we think that what we can afford is these three rail spurs over 15 years, and we hope that the totality of that is enough to get people, at least in Marion and Hamilton, and maybe Hendricks and Johnson counties, to be willing to invest.
Thank you. So here's a broader question for you. How do you envision Central Indiana and Indianapolis 5 years from now? What will be the most noticeable changes from current economic development efforts?
That was your question, right? Well, 5 years from now, if this moves forward, we will have our new bus system. It will be regional. We'll have a competent governance structure for that, and we'll have the nickel plate line done, unless we can figure out how to do more faster. The staging in this plan is within 5 years, you get that much. 5 more years, we go south-southeast, and in the 15th year, we can go across the county. I think that's transformational. And I don't see any reason that we can't get down that path and have that done, at least started within 5 years. And I think that has consequences that we've talked about for the urban core. For me personally, though, the game in economic development is about talent. And we have no bigger issue, especially issue for our urban core, than education. And so a whole lot needs to be done in the next 5 years, and 5 years is a lifetime for kids who are suffering it right now. I think we will see radical change in public education in Indianapolis in a 5-year period, and I think we need it.
So we have just a few minutes left, and now that you've shared your vision, or at least a little bit about your vision for the future, we'll end with this question. Your name has popped up several times in the media as a plausible candidate for Indianapolis mayor or governor. Do you have any political aspirations?
You're all going to leave on time. The answer is no, but thank you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
That was Mark Miles, the chairman of the 2012 Super Bowl Host Committee. He's also the CEO of the Central Indiana Corporate Partnership. Aaron Bingaman is the executive director of the Central Indiana Regional Transportation Authority. He's part of the IndyConnect team. Bingaman says there are benefits for having public transportation in the city and describes Indy's plan to make this happen. There have been a number of public meetings held to talk about the public transportation initiative.
IndyConnect is one of our region's first major efforts to coordinate and plan for all modes of transit and transportation. It's a roads plan, it's a bus plan, it's a rail plan, it's pedestrian bike. So what's new is that our private sector has led an initiative and come to the conclusion on their own, through their own analysis, that Central Indiana is going to benefit from this multimodal transit system. So for the first time, we've got some real private sector backing, instead of the choir always being at church and talking about we need to have transit. Well, these guys have found the economic reasons to do it and are supporting that initiative. So we're taking, really for the first time in a long time, I'd say, a regional comprehensive approach to planning for this, with the goal of coming to a conclusion on that long-term transportation plan by the end of the year. So that's new and that's exciting. When we look at the benefits, you know, there's no silver bullet for why someone might benefit from riding transit. And we don't perpetuate it as the cure-all, But a lot of things can happen around transportation and good infrastructure. We've known for a long time in Indiana that transportation drives our economy. We're the crossroads of America. But our portfolio is really heavily invested in one type of transportation. And so diversifying is only going to strengthen our portfolio that much more. And I think that's what the private sector found when they conducted their analysis. So when we look at economic development, there's a lot of layers to that equation. Helping people get to work, all right, the jobs that people have today and making it more reasonable and feasible for them to get to work, that it takes somebody who lives 15 minutes by car from FedEx to get there, takes 2 hours to ride the bus to get there, and it doesn't run when their shift ends or their shift begins, so they're planning their entire day. That's an incredible loss to that person, and it has an impact on our economy, but you know, we're using transit infrastructure to get people to work. These are not just about out-to-in commutes and getting people to work in the downtown. People in central Indiana work everywhere. There are jobs all over this 9-10 county area. So having a regional transportation infrastructure that goes to where the jobs are and connects people from where they are, and it's not just downtown, out-to-in, it's everywhere, that's one of the economic benefits. When we look at particularly the fixed guideway infrastructure, light rail, commuter rail, and we look at our peers around the country who are making these investments, we see the station areas are tremendous opportunities for growth and investment, and in a lot of places, reinvestment. If you think about where rail lines are located, when they were built 100 years ago or 150 years ago, it was industry that located in proximity to those. And so they are our greatest opportunities for reinvestment. Some of them are brownfields. Some of them are just underutilized properties. And so they become great magnets for a growth and redevelopment. And so we see new investment for people wanting to be in walking proximity to a transit station. We see connectivity to our bus systems. And now you've got kind of a mobility. You've got a new base of property income and sales tax immediately adjacent to it. And then the layers down of economic impact start to talk about access to health care and education and libraries. So if you improve overall mobility, you tend to have a society that walks a little bit more. They can get to their doctor's office, or they can get to the hospital without having to call the 911 to get there. There are a lot of these impacts when we improve overall mobility, and so that's what the transit system can really mean to our economy at a lot of different levels. The IndyConnect vision in this draft plan really connects the urbanized area of central Indiana. So we're not going out to Amo and Hendricks County. I mean, you know, we're talking about Plainfield. We're not going out to the far eastern edge of Hancock County. We're talking about Greenfield. But within that, then, how can we get people, from county to county, and not necessarily just from Zionsville to downtown, but from Zionsville to Carmel or Avon to Brownsburg, and then really doing more for crosstown mobility in Indianapolis and Marion County. What IndyConnect, you know, the major portion of what's proposed for our transportation system will occur in Indianapolis and Marion County. This is the center of the region. Our donut cannot have a hole in it. And what's proposed in IndyConnect, particularly for the bus system, but also with the rail segments, is true crosstown service. So 38th Street, being able to get from one part of 38th Street to the other part of 38th Street without having to go downtown to make a transfer. Mm-hmm. Same thing for 86th Street or Raymond Street. I mean, that the kind of crosstown mobility that doesn't require riding, you know, the spoke and hub system to get downtown and make a transfer and get back out, and ultimately just wasting time and making an inconvenience for people. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of, you know, cross community mobility that we're talking about, the trips that make sense for people.
Aaron Bingaman is the executive director of the Central Indiana Regional Transportation Authority. You've been listening to the Economic Club of Indiana. Next month's speaker is former Michigan Governor John Engler. Engler served 3 terms as governor, and he's now the president of the National Association of Manufacturers. The organization is focused on opening foreign markets to American goods, improving U.S. infrastructure, and developing domestic energy. The Economic Club of Indiana is a production of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations. Thanks for listening.
Proliance Energy, providing natural gas to more than 1,200 commercial, industrial, utility, and municipal customers. Proliance, adding power to energy. Information is at proliance.com.